In the new book, Connecting Generations, Chaim Herring focuses on how baby boomers, Gen Xers, and millennials perceive one another and looks underneath the generational labels that compound isolation. Herring is an author, presenter, and nonprofit organizational futurist. He is also a former congregational rabbi. He offers ways that we can prepare current and future generations for a world in which ongoing interactions with people from multiple generations become the norm and re-experience how enriching intergenerational relationships are personally and communally. Again, the name of the book is Connecting Generations, and it's a pleasure to welcome Chaim Herring to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe. Excited to be here.
Give us a sense of why you thought it was important to connect these generations. Why do we need to do that?
I think that there were a few things that happened simultaneously. First, I heard those who were 60 plus, 70, saying, you know, I feel like I still have something to contribute to younger people. They're polite to me, but I just don't seem to have an organic way to connect with them. Then I would hear the same thing from those who were teenagers doing some volunteer work that I had done with teens, those who were just starting out in college. And it was the same message. I have something to say, but nobody seems to be listening or caring enough to listen. Then I began to learn more about loneliness and isolation, something we used to associate with those who were older, and then recognizing now that that has dropped to younger generations, and the health risks, aside from just the human pain involved of loneliness and isolation, the health risks are great, and the pain is often unbearable. So why not try to reconnect generations?
So how does that work in the sense of when you look at the work that needs to be done to connect the generations, where do we begin?
There are a number of places to begin from small to grandiose, but we don't have to solve human hunger to take a step. What I've learned is I'm not going to wait for an act of Congress to reach out a hand in friendship to someone whom I pass by in my office, may not know their name. I now actually pause and just take a moment and say, I don't want to just mumble good morning anymore. Tell me who you are. And just out of those simple everyday acts that we've forgotten because our eyeballs are glued to our screen, some friendships may develop. There are platforms like Nextdoor, for example, where neighbors can connect. There are local conversation projects going on where the idea is not to persuade. Really, it's just to be open and non-judgmental and to learn how to listen. So mentor if you're a boomer, mentor someone younger. If you're a Gen Xer or a millennial, there's 720 hours in a month. Take 5 hours, I bet you could find that, and begin to volunteer. And it's reciprocity. Instead of giving someone the detriment of the doubt, give them the benefit of the doubt if they're from a different generation, that you may still have something to learn from them.
On the cover of your book, there are four individuals, and they go across all demographics, and they're all on a device. What role do you think technology plays in this connection, both for good and bad?
I'm glad that you mentioned both for good and bad, because with all significant changes in life, there are positives and there are negatives. So I think the cover image really speaks to the dark side of technology. I would call it social inaptitude. We have more apps to connect us, and yet we have greater social isolation. We're almost retreating inside of our devices. On the other hand, there are ways that technology can bring people together. So for those who are elderly and may have moved to a different location, they can connect with people from their former location. There are programs that pair up younger people and older people around technology, where technology becomes a platform for bridging generations. So I might be Well, I actually am a little bit slow with my thumb sometimes on my smartwatch. It can make me look dumb. And somebody who's younger can help me with that. And if I've got a ongoing relationship with that person who's younger, I can also notice that maybe something doesn't seem to be going right in that person's life at the moment. And getting back to that earlier theme and being able, through a relationship, to say, is everything okay with you? Those are simple ways to begin. Reciprocal learning, right? No longer top down, I'm older, therefore I know more. Be open to learning. And reciprocal forgiveness and understanding.
You write a lot in the book about generational stereotypes. Give us a sense of where those stereotypes come from. And ultimately, get ready for this, how accurate are they?
Well, where do they come from? I think that each generation, and I want to just focus on boomers and millennials as an example, because we have six, maybe seven generations now. Each generation tends to stereotype the other, and I think they arise from experience that I would say doesn't reflect any more deeper relationships. So we're each critiquing one another. Millennials, and this was fascinating, I asked millennials and boomers the same question. So, for example, I said to millennials, when you hear the word boomer, what image or words come to mind? And I heard from millennials, oh, the bucket list, they want to wait until the end of work life to have fun. They're work obsessed, they're goal driven, tough and tenacious, and they're entitled. When I asked boomers, when you hear the word millennial, what comes to mind, it was more like, kick the bucket. I want to have fun now. I mean, why are work and fun mutually exclusive? Boomers believe that millennials are pleasure seekers. They don't like that attitude of blending work and fun. Snowflakes, which I think is a really demeaning term. They have no grit. They're individual. They believe that they are entitled, and the same word entitled came up, not just to work at my place, but to become CEO within a short period of time. Adulting is a word that I heard. Didn't know that that was a verb, because boomers became adults between the ages of 19 and 23 typically, and they don't understand that millennials' lives experience are different. They follow pathways into adulthood that take longer. And entitled, while both generations use that of the other, it meant different things. So for millennials, they were saying, you know, boomers, just because you have more seniority, you're not entitled to lead automatically. And when boomers use the word entitled as applied to millennials, they were saying, you really should be lucky to have a job here. So don't talk about what you don't like and when your next promotion is. There's just a lack of willingness to, instead of shooting an email off to someone, to get up from a desk, walk over, and have a conversation.
This whole idea of connectedness, and were we ever good at it? I mean, were we ever, or did the technology just allow us an excuse to not walk across the room?
Well, I can only speak to the time that I've been alive. And look, I'm sure that every generation, in fact, I know, has said, oh, the good old days when it was so much better. I don't know that we were ever really good at it. But the question is, what is the new challenge? What's the new paradigm that we have to have? Because we don't only have to communicate with one generation above and a generation below, but we're now talking about people living well into their 90s or early hundreds, and we have, you know, a span of over a century. How do we find more organic ways to connect people? We segregate. We're a very age-segregated society by neighborhood, type of dwelling that we have. you know, care for seniors on a continuum of care campus is compassionate, but those places are usually not in neighborhoods. So how can young and old see one another if they're actually not visible because they're not located near each other?
So let's end with this question, which is, when it comes to connecting generations, where does your optimism lie?
My optimism is that I might be detecting a pendulum swing. And here's where the stereotypes actually don't hold up. Many of the millennials whom I interviewed very much care about the state of the world, the state of politics, the state of the environment. They want to get involved. They're open to having a relationship with someone who's older. These are good young people. And many of the boomers, I think if they can let go a little bit of assumptions and actually take a step back and just say, you know what, I don't have to lead. Don't put me on the shelf. I'm not ready. My expiration date isn't gone yet. But let me learn from you as well. And along that learning route will come some reciprocal teaching as well. And I think that's starting to happen.
The name of the book is Connecting Generations, Bridging the Boomer, Gen X, and Millennial Divide. The book is published by Roman and Littlefield. Hi, I'm Herring. Thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
And wonderful to be here. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, Connecting Generations. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.